we invited Dr. Mikovits to join our call today. I reached out to Judy. I saw you on the Children's Health Defense, the Truth About Fauci, the episode that you did. And I just have always admired not only your brilliance, but your courage and your passion. And we know that you've been through so much to get the truth out. So we're really honored that you're spending this hour with our community, and you're amongst friends. There are many people who just really want to seek the truth who are on this call. So we are going to give you the floor. And then Dr. K, you know, however you want to, you know, guide Judy and pick her brain, he's going to maybe interject some questions, Judy, as you go yeah. through your talk. And then we'll save a few minutes at the end. Dr. Klinghart has an update, about four or five slides to go through on updates, what he's found out in the last week. And we'll have a power hour. So, and for many of you all, I won't take time. Dr. Mikovits has a very long bio, but you're in good hands. She's a brilliant researcher. She went to UVA, which is my alma mater, and also George Washington University. And she knows the science inside and out, amongst many other things. So thank you so much for being here.
And thank you, Christine and Dr. K. So do you want me to stop or start with maybe some slides or kind of what, or the testing or any particular topic?
Judy, I'll just start with sort of what you think we should know, you know, that just ramble off, like, you know, you have a free flowing mind. And so if you have some PowerPoint pictures or so that you think could be helpful or to make it a little bit more colorful, then show those.
I think I'll talk for a little while, and if people have questions, I see the chat room and things like that, because over the last couple of weeks and sometimes for 2 hours at a time, there are a couple of really important questions that people cannot seem to get. And that is, what's the difference between, the first is, what's the difference between SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19? So, SARS means severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus, but they didn't put the COV on it because it was the first. MERS, of course, is the Middle East respiratory syndrome coronavirus. Both of those two viruses cause severe acute respiratory syndrome diseases that killed as much as 1/10%, and I believe the other one was up to 30%, doesn't really matter. So in the beginning, when this virus was said to have emerged from the seafood market by way of the Wuhan laboratory, or whichever way you want to go with it, it's probably by way of the Wuhan laboratory to the seafood market. And this was 2015, so there's a great deal of these are public papers, published papers by our colleagues who are virologists, you know, and said, no, we shouldn't be doing this dangerous work. So the idea was, well, here we have these two coronaviruses, which have acquired the ability to infect subsets of cells that make them very pathogenic. You know, the ACE2 receptor, don't need to go into all that biology, but we should be very fearful. So COVID-19 is the disease. And we all know from, you know, Koch's postulates, Hill's criteria, having the infection doesn't mean having the disease. If you can have measles and not have the disease, you can have HIV and not have AIDS. Yeah, you know, and what, you know, the reason you don't is because you're, the reason you're infected and you don't necessarily develop disease is because disease is the overreaction of a compromised immune system. Disease is, in the case of the coronaviruses, the first thing is oxidative stress. So if you have adequate supplies of glutathione and you're not under excessive oxidative stress, or you're not somehow immune compromised, like say my husband with COPD, you know, then there's not an issue. You'll and you can always take glutathione, you know, and I know you've been you know, advising patients in that direction in a time where there's some of these extra, you know, these flu, you know, essentially any flu season. The second way these viruses cause disease is that inflammatory signature of disease. And this is important because in all my years of virology, whether it be Ebola, HIV, HTLV1, XMRVs, the first thing we do before we isolate the virus is we ask who are the people most likely to be expressing the virus, to be shedding the virus, to be spreading the virus, to be getting sick from the virus. Well, if you don't have that inflammatory signature of disease, by definition, the virus isn't expressed and the reservoirs aren't expanding. That's when you've lost control and the immune system can't shut it down. And it's the inflammation driving the damage, further suppressing the type 1 interferon's responses, which are your most potent and initial anti-RNA viral therapy. So retroviruses and coronaviruses and influenza viruses and MMR, they're all RNA viruses, and Zika and Ebola, all the latest pandemics. So you've got type 1 interferon, and as long as your plasmacytoid dendritic cells are producing type 1 interferon, they're talking to the regulatory B cells. They're talking to the cells that make antibodies. So, and that's functioning. Well, where is that not functioning that we knew from our, you know, four decades of work? Well, that's not working in patients who already have AIDS by definition, a deficiency. So chronic Lyme patients, people without natural killer cells, people without that communication, people with XMRVs, people with HIV, because you lose the ability, and especially chronic Lyme, the disease is common variable immune deficiency. So they don't make antibodies, and it's variable because we don't know which subclasses of antibodies we don't make. So we give them IVIG. So those right now, since Del Bigtree just showed so convincingly on high wire, those are the people that are going to come to your practices. Those are almost certainly everyone on this panel is that. You know, those with XMRVs, those with Borrelia, those with Babesia, those with these acquired immune deficiencies that we've been dealing with for the entire 40 years. Those people, and I saw it online last night, well, what am I going to do about the vaccine? And this is from Robert Bransfield's listserv, Microbes and Mental Illness. And I saw a patient say, well, what are we going to do? We don't make antibodies. And it's like, well, for Christ's sake, don't get a vaccine, because then you don't have, you know, you're further depressing your type 1 interferon responses. And so the question more is how to support your immune system and how to boost your immune system, because the vaccines drive the activation of a lot of RNA viruses, including the endogenous retroviruses that further dysregulate, you know, our friend, the DNA methylation machinery, the epigenetics, you know, that further drive the reservoirs to continue increasing as you've lost the balance in your immune response. So you certainly don't, get a vaccine ever. And I've had such a difficult time, not particularly in the ME/CFS community, but more in the chronic Lyme community, as they don't appreciate that the same pathways of immune dysregulation are cross-talking in these diseases. So when the natural killer cells, whose primary job in the immune system is to kill cancer cells and virus-infected cells, if you're a cancer patient, why would you inject a virus? And the flu vaccines are live attenuated viruses. The polio vaccines are live attenuated virus, hepatitis A. So why would you be doing this if you're already compromised? Because you are driving the acceleration and the of the reservoirs and the activation of the latent viruses, which your fragile immune system, by all the work you've done, has already tried to silence. So you're getting in great trouble, number one, if you get a flu vaccine. So I you know, and even more the insanity, let's talk about the masks. So if you get a flu vaccine and you wear a mask, you are further depleting your type 1 interferons. You're expressing those viruses, three of them at least. In Italy, it's four. They come in birds. In America, the vaccine, the particular one this year, is chicken eggs. They have coronaviruses, and they have the influenza viruses have the receptors, and we all know the recombination game is occurring in vivo because you've injected it rather than being infected. So if you're wearing a mask to keep a healthy person from coughing, well, again, healthy people aren't coughing, from coughing viruses on you like coronaviruses, that they have to amplify almost, you know, how 10 to the ninth log a zillion times in order to detect a piece of RNA. Nobody isolated the virus out of the saliva. You're not coughing. You're not going to cough that up directly and hurt somebody. So all you're doing is you're breathing in and out. That stress is horribly immune suppressive. It's taking out your type 1 interferon pathway, and it's allowing the flame to go higher. NF-kappa B, inflammatory cytokines, IL-6, IL-8, the chemokines that are driving all these viruses into the brain. So the worst thing that you could possibly do is number one, wear a mask. I mean, why would you do that? My husband has COPD. You know, no, he doesn't want to breathe CO2. He needs oxygen. And I think all of the data, and that's why I keep directing people back to Dell's show the last few weeks, thehighwire.com, is because other doctors other than me, people like you, are saying the same thing. Wait a minute. And then you hear the doublespeak from the government, which you know, really doesn't matter, because hopefully that old boys corrupt network will end after the people are let free tomorrow, and this whole thing ends tomorrow. Then we'll go about deciding if this was an honest mistake or not, which it clearly was not. So don't get the testing. You know, don't submit to any kind of testing. The PCR test is meaningless. And so all that's intended to do is scare you and say you are a healthy carrier. So you can pull out any sequence you want on that PCR, as we know. So think all the way back to the plague of corruption that was the XMRVs, the human gamma retroviruses. What did they say? Oh, you can't do that PCR. Oh, your reagents are contaminated. Oh, you can't do that PCR. Well, we had isolations. We had Western. We had serology. And we actually had electron micrographs. None of those things have been done there. And the government has actually redefined all of this. So the first thing they told you is go get the flu vaccine. And they've told them that for several years now. But don't get the serology test. And the FDA doesn't only do don't get the serology test. The FDA does you can't use the serology test. The only ones approved are the ones from the CDC. Well, we all know how corrupt they are. So don't get any kind of testing. If you're healthy, stand up and say, I won't wear a mask. Healthy people don't spread disease. I won't play into that psychological warfare, which is horrible for you and your kids. Why can't I play with my friends, mommy? Well, just because somebody says it's over tomorrow, do you think that kid's ever going to look at his friends again and wonder if he's going to be sick? How much OCD are we going to drive as people wash their hands and people wipe down with poisonous things the groceries, you know, drenched in Clorox or whatever else it is, those toxic chemicals they put on the grocery store belt, you know. And then the other are, you know, if you're among the susceptible, as my 81-year-old husband with COPD, and you hear my voice, I always get pleurisy because I was born 6 weeks early, and as an identical twin, and your lungs aren't finished developing. So whenever I stress, I'll get, you know, fluid in my lungs. So the last thing I want to do is wear a mask, and same thing with him with COPD. So we walk in and say, oh, thank you very much. Thank you for protecting me. Thank you very much. Because I can't wear a mask. I have a congenital lung disease. So it works. David does it every day, and he goes in the grocery store because I start throwing things. Anyway, he's the mild German. I'm the angry Hungarian. So, at any rate, no testing. You know, go back outside. If somebody stops you, say, you know, didn't you know it's over? It was on the news here. The death rate's 0.1% to 0.3%. It's even less than a normal flu season. So we're all free, you know, and go out without the mask. Go back out, start it now. Talk to your Congress, your legislators, have health, everybody healthy, go to work. So what do we do about the susceptible? Because the susceptible are all the people that we deal with every day. The cancer patients that haven't been able to get treatment, who, because otherwise, if you don't get tested for COVID-19, you don't get treatment. Well, cancer patients, by definition, will express any one of the hundreds of coronaviruses they've come in contact with throughout their life and never got sick from. And so that's a problem, even more of a problem, as I mentioned, when he turned on the TV last night, we found that all of a sudden the coronavirus has, SARS-CoV-2 has acquired these magical powers of looking just like a human gamma retrovirus and a multi-system chronic organ failure disease, and now we've got access to the brain. Huh, how come my disease signature, our published disease signature from 2006 and seven, we published the disease, we had the disease signature on paper before we recruited the patients into the studies. And so that told you the patient that was expressing virus and couldn't control virus, and it was no different than HIV, it was no different. I never isolated HIV from a healthy HIV infected person. I could do it all day for Magic Johnson or any of the people on TV, pre-exposure prophylaxis. What do you do for people at risk? My husband, me, you give us type 1 interferons. They 40 years of research, it cost $600 for a vial that would protect 1,000 people for the 50 to 200 units you need for a solid week. That's the vial straight from Merck. But what did Merck do to it last year? Oh, they discontinued it. So it goes beyond simple ignorance to plandemic, to a plague of corruption, and that they literally took the medicines away. We know what we've seen in the past 3 weeks about hydroxychloroquine. Well, you know, we know that's how Dr. John Fankhauser, the doctor in the Liberian Ebola outbreak that killed 21,000 Liberians, the first thing he did when the doctors got sick and they were all gowned up and they were spraying themselves down with Clorox, how'd they get sick? It's clear it aerosolized. Oh, Ebola through the air, now we've got a problem. What were we told? You know, throughout, you know, oh, only blood and body fluid as millions died. And then this virus again came through Fort Detrick. So that's not relevant for talking about it. What is relevant, the first thing John did was pre-exposure prophylaxis. He took hydroxychloroquine, anti-malarial drugs. You don't let any other pathogen take down the immune system. You don't let gluten take down your glutathione. You don't let glyphosate take, you know, or increase your inflammatory cytokines. You don't let glyphosate take down your glutathione levels. You support yourself. Then you hydrate yourself. A lot of the injuries that doctors are seeing look like radiation poisoning. And of course they are. But that adds, and again, the 5G, the energy from 5G, the gigahertz range is exactly in the range to have hemoglobin release iron as ferritin in the blood. So a quick test for you is ferritin in the blood. It's on almost every blood test. It's simple, it's cheap, ask for it. So any of your patients who are at risk, will be above 3,000. But if they're in that window, hemochromatosis, a lot of your Irish, UK, those cohorts we saw that were more susceptible to getting disease from XMRV infections, from the human gamma retroviruses. That's why I spent a lot of time in UK and in Ireland, because they're more susceptible to developing ME, CFS, if they get that infection. But 25 to 40 million Americans, or probably even more than that, up to 70 million Americans, 8%, 6% in the so-called multi-center Lipkin study, they said no data in the abstract. That was a lie. The data, clear in table three, it said 6.1%, 6.1% in patients and 6.1% in controls from Mikovits and Rossetti data from the only serology tests that work. Still, it's still 6.1%. There's no association to disease. But what are you going to do? Those are the healthy carriers right now who are going to get sick when triggered with not only this coronavirus, but should they ever get another infection because they don't know, I mean, another vaccination, because they don't understand how those are driving the immune dysfunction. If you have an acquired immune deficiency, if you're carrying HIV up until 2011, when the fraud was done in the human gamma retroviruses in the XMRV studies, when that fraud was perpetrated by Lipkin, by Fauci, you know, and those are the same people that paid the Chinese throughout, as soon starting in 2013 and in 2015, when the rest of virologists caught on, you know, they started that just as soon as they shut it down in 2012. Now let's go back and cover it up. So now all of a sudden, a simple coronavirus has super, you know, viral powers. No coronavirus infects the brains. You're seeing psychosis clinically. You're seeing that air hunger, you know, so well when the patient is desaturating, you know, check ferritin in the iron, give them HBOT therapy, give, you know, ozone, deuterium depleted water. Huge, huge, huge in the metabolic. And in fact, I had a nice conversation with Dr. Laszlo Boros and Dr. Petra Dorsman yesterday. We sat here in my apartment for several hours. And so, and as he explained to me, the reason why the kids aren't getting sick is they're growing. So they're not building up deuterium. So they're growing. So they're using hydrogen. So it's those that have long been the most deuterium in their mitochondria, the mitochondrial diseases. So the kids aren't getting sick. So it's suggesting very strongly that deuterium depleted water and ways to deplete deuterium through diet, which he's published on for decades. There is the head of pediatrics or as a full professor in pediatrics at UCLA. So he's sharing some of those papers with me. The blood diseases, you know, idiopathic thrombocytopenia. Oh, wasn't that one we associated with MMR and XMRV? Not saying the coronavirus won't trigger the expression, not saying, but coronaviruses cannot infect white blood cells. I know that the reports from Dr. Montagnier and the group in India said, oh, there's HIV sequences in it. Yes, you've got the envelope proteins, GP120, and the one that goes right through the cell membrane, the transmembrane protein, GP41, as Luc Montagnier reported to us almost 6 weeks ago now, maybe even longer, February. So we know this virus, and it really doesn't matter that it's engineered, because if you culture in monkey kidney cells, you can pick up HIV. So an awful lot there. Don't test, don't wear masks, go outside, breathe air, get vitamin D, protect with pre-exposure prophylaxis. Alpha interferon, I'll get you to sources. Again, the FDA keeps us away from sources. The dihydroxychloroquines for sure. You know, the very treatments you give for the scutellaria, you know, the citrus, the cystus incanus, you know, so, and Science, the journal did this in the beginning. Oh, look how interesting antiretroviral drugs work. You know, how interesting. And we'll do a bunch of studies. But first, we're going to kill everybody that was, you know, that first line. So the people that are dying, you know, don't get me wrong. It's those of us who are already victims of the plague of corruption that surrounds the XMRV studies, the Lyme, you know, how those agents, how Borrelia, how Babesia, you know, mycoplasma, you know, all of those things are now what this, you know, why does that look like this? Because that's AIDS. You know, and there's far more in that needle. Every time we culture these vaccines in animal cultures, we have to add antimycotics, antibiotics, because our cultures get mycoplasma and mold. And so here we're all running off in different in directions like five-year-olds on a soccer field. Follow this ball, follow that ball. And they've got us all stress. So when everybody sees that what you've been doing all along is the answer to prevent the next outbreak and the next outbreak and the next outbreak. And now, thanks to last week's publication of Plague of Corruption, it shows this very thing. We finished writing it in May of 2019, and it predicts what the government's going to do, this massive shutdown. It's a massive cover up. And the intention was to bury everybody, call it coronavirus infectious disease or coronavirus disease. Nope, infections are not disease. Infections are infections, and you modulate and support the immune response so that the person builds an immunity. And if they're immune compromised, then they don't build, then you support them the way that you do in your practice.
Okay, Judy, thank you.
Not a word in edgewise, I thought.
Let me ask you a few questions. First, a little political question. So I know I just looked up Fauci's patent. So he's got four patents on treatment of HIV, and a big point is the GP120 protein that you just mentioned. Sure. Would you just say a few things? I mean, Fauci is, of course, highly regarded in the US. Say something, tell us the truth about it, because I loved it when Donald Trump stood up against him, but maybe not enough. And why can he not be fired? What's his position? Just say a few things about him.
Well, I think
I know you must respect him as a colleague. You must have high regards for him
and deep respect. Absolutely not. Since I was 25 years old in 1984 and picked up the telephone and Tony Fauci screamed and threatened at me because his buddy Bob Gallo couldn't replicate Luc Montagnier's isolation of HIV a few months earlier, and we had the data, we had the paper and press, we exactly replicated it. And I told a friend last night, so imagine that so Luc Montagnier is us with XMRV, and Frank Rossetti and his team, which included me, was low alter in XMRV. So they confirmed it within 6 months. It's go. We see all the disease associations. And what did the government do in the case of XMRV? Well, the exact same thing Tony Fauci did in HIV. So what he said was, I understand you have a paper and press. Yes. You know, I have no idea who he is. I'm 25 years old. I could care less who these. I never bowed down to any kind of authority, and I never will. But at any rate, he's on the phone screaming at me like literally a lunatic. I said, I'm sorry, Frank, didn't you hear me? Dr. Rossetti's out of town, and he'll give it to you when he gets back. Well, they've got a big problem because, you know, Gallo plans to copy the work, get it out, say he did it first. He didn't isolate that virus. He isolated a new virus. So what did they do when Low Alter confirmed us? They said, oh no, they didn't get XMRV. They got PMLV. You know, are we all that stupid? You know, and then Matt Gonda in his laboratory in Kunio, Nagashima, was the same electron microscopist who did ours, showed very clearly our virus wasn't, you know, that virus, the LAV, the lymphadenopathy virus that Luc Montagnier had isolated, and we isolated it from the same patients, no different, had a distinct electron micrograph. The electron micrograph never lies. And in our case, it was very clear from the beginning, the electron micrograph of our viruses, of the many strains, were clearly not the synthetic clone BP62, the infectious clone that DeRisi and Silver, or actually Silverman's lab, said, oh, this is the virus. Well, no, it never was the virus. That was not the complete sequence, never was. And it was their lie and their fault. So doesn't matter. Okay, so I'm just putting the parallel. So they started this. So my very first interaction with Tony Fauci was, you're telling me you want me to do something unethical? I said, I'm sorry, I can't give it to you. When Dr. Rossetti comes back, I'm sure he'll take care of that. You know, and this guy was just ballistic on the phone, and you could hear them both in the background. I'm thinking, wow, you know, that's kind of bizarre from my world. But at any rate, I walked out of the office, and all the technicians were standing around, all the people in the labs like, oh man, you don't know what you just did. They're going to fire you. And I'm like, you know, and Frank Rossetti comes back a couple of weeks later and he says, you did that for me? I'm like, no, I didn't do it for you, asshole. I did it because it's the right thing to do. And from that day on, Frank and I were fast friends because that's the exact right answer. And I didn't do it for him. I did it because it was the right thing to do. So this was 1984. I don't hear from Fauci again. What I live is the experience between 1984 and 1991, while AIDS spreads around the world and kills millions, they're targeting the T cell. They're targeting the T cell. Of course, the T cell's dying, but you're not thinking. Only 1 in 10,000 T cells are infected. Why are you targeting the T cell to block their infection? Clearly, if 1 in 10,000 T cells is infected and the rest of them are dying, you got another shooter. You got another orchestrator of disease. And you know, it's exactly an inflammatory signature from the macrophage, monocyte macrophage. Of course, we didn't know that the mast cell at the time had a resident, had a chronic phase where those same cytokines. So we know the mast cell activations disorders, and we know how that all works in mantle cell lymphoma. Now we've learned that over the years, but back then it was just the monocyte has to be the reservoir, the Trojan horse. It has to be harboring the virus in a latent state, methylated on those CpGs. You turn it on, you wake it up, you cripple the immune system in the methylation machinery from being able to silence it again because you're under too much inflammatory stress. IL-6, IL-1, IL-8, MIP-1 alpha, MCP-1, no lower levels of IL-7. You can't make antibodies. You know, this is not rocket science. It's really simple biology. That was what my PhD said.
Will you get back to Fauci? How does he fit in all that?
So what he had done that whole time, so from 1984 until 1991, when my PhD thesis showed otherwise, he had been pushing the therapies and all the grants in the NIH towards T cell therapies, because he owned the patent for IL-2, which Frank Rossetti discovered. And that's clear here, and it's part of it. So then you go to 91 and Fauci again, NAIAD, this is still a culture thing. It's their bad behavior contributing to disease. So we do our work in my postdoctoral studies between Steve Balin and in NF-kappa-B signaling, and it's a time where NF-kappa-B wasn't a nuclear protein. So they said, oh, you're an idiot. You don't get that inflammatory signature because everybody knows that NF-kappa-B is a cytoplasmic protein. So what Fauci's doing is he's controlling the research. He's controlling the message by censorship of data, by not funding data, by driving all the major journal publications into, you know, a way that is a lie. So I don't have another contact at all with him until, you know, 2009, when the paper is published in Science, and that was still a good day because they had no idea, because Frank Rossetti never sent a paper through channels again after the fraud of Gallo and Fauci on HIV, so that the government, people don't realize how the government, every branch of the government, the CDC had to pass off on it, the FDA, because they all have a vested interest. And Fauci's the puppet master. Fauci's the Oz, you know, he's the little man behind the screen making everybody scared. And when you pull back the screen, you realize he's nothing. And so everything he was saying, so in 2011, when it was realized that the blood supply was contaminated, that was the problem with HIV. They told you only gay men, IV drug users and prostitutes could be infected. And then there's Ryan White and Arthur Ashe and how many million people who died from a contaminated blood supply. This was clear March 29th of 2011. The association with ITP, the association with multiple myeloma and other things that other people brought to the question, and that was the meeting in September of 2010. So Fauci was directed by Collins because the blood supply was contaminated. Where did I get controls? Where did I get the controls for the UK study that I reported in the meeting September 6, 2010 at the NIH? The blood supply. And so that's the time when Collins said, do the study, do a large multi-center study, and Fauci appointed Lipkin, and then proceeded to publish commission fraud, I called it the other day. This study. Oh, Peterson, Knox, Levy, oh, you're all on papers in Science, and John Coffin does the immaculate recombination, as we call it in chapter 8 of the first book. You know, what is the immaculate recombination? Remember that garbage pre-XMRV, pre-XMRD2, and they got together, and that's what the contamination of the lab, you know. And it only happened once and it'll never happen again. We had multiple strains across species, and that's why we call them human gamma retrovirus. We had maize and Pfizer monkey virus. We had mink cell. What's a mink animal? Well, a mink animal is an intermediate between Ebola and coronavirus, a small animal that could have been in a market. And so all of those viruses from top to bottom were shown in our original paper, the phylogeny. It wasn't just a mouse virus that you could talk around, and Fauci's covering it up. So when it became very clear the depth and breadth of the disease associations, then he shut it down. When against all odds, the only cohort that looked anything like our patients, that's why I keep saying, healthy people don't spread viruses. You must have the same sick cohort. And that's what the talk I gave in Ottawa on September 22nd. And it shows, oh, if I just add 5-beta cytidine, it wakes up and we see it on PCR again. And they were calling it false positive in Science. Did anybody say false positive about the 80% false positive in the coronavirus testing that only the CDC was allowed to do? You know, it's so you see, when you start to see Fauci, all of this, Robert Redfield, who took down the military in the 80s with HIV, he's heading the CDC. You know, this Deborah Birx, you know, they should have been in prison a long time ago for spreading HIV around the continent. And so Fauci, you know, took away the funding, you know, basically told everybody, you know, you deny it, throw me under the bus, and everybody else will make millions of dollars. And you can follow this in, and Judy will never work again, will never get a grant again, all of my publications are disregarded as if they never happened. And now people like Peterson and Hansen and everybody on the multi-center study are getting paid off big time. You know, they're publishing data that's not true. They're not T-cell biologists. They're further hurting the patient community. So here comes plague of corruption. I do hope everybody will read it, because that's how you can follow this whole thing. What does the last chapter, you know, so when I'm shut down in Ottawa, September 22nd, and Fauci's there with Varmus, because remember, Frank's a National Cancer Institute. So National Cancer Institute's head was Harold Varmus, who was brought in to take out Frank Rossetti. And you can follow Harold Varmus through the xenotransplantation, through the laws that the manipulation that should never happen, through starting the vaccine program in 1999, and all this weighs on COVID-19. So with Fauci, so he told, you know, everybody on the paper, no more grants, no more money, including the Whittemores, including Peterson, including Hansen, including Montoya. Everybody gets to keep their grants. So you make this happen, this fraud in the multi-center study, and you'll be rewarded. And Fauci rewarded as soon as the paper was published in October 12, 2012 issue of MBio, a journal of Association of Microbiology journal. In MBio, within weeks, Lipkin is rewarded with $34 million to start a new center for discovery and research. And what did he do with that money? Oh, he funded Dr. Barrick of North Carolina to do the work with Wuhan. He funded the work that showed, oh, wait a minute, coronaviruses have epigenetics, and he literally just, you know, changed the name of the virus and called it different things. Coronaviruses don't persist.
let me stop you there. Let me ask you a question. This is a bit personal. I don't know if I should do it here, but I had two blood samples from August last year, August 1919, sitting in a freezer in Switzerland in my practice there. They were from two patients from Texas, mm-hmm. who had a really, really bad case of pneumonia in August. And I had them tested now, the blood tested from August with the PCR test on the current coronavirus, and they were both positive. Now, how can it be that an illness that started in December mm-hmm. was already in, at least in Texas, in August?
Right.
Can you please help me? I'm lost with it. I've always thought I'm a scientist, but there's two things that don't.
Yeah.
If it was a transfer animal to, or even if it escaped from a lab in Wuhan in December, how can it have been in Texas in August? Do you have an idea?
Absolutely. So you would have looked then at your patients and so showed that they had IgG. So they would have a memory response. They would have an IgG. It would have been a past infection. And that's exactly what I was leading to. So as soon as they shut me down, they gave Lipkin a bunch of money to go do the cover up, to go do another RNA virus and do the work, not only in Wuhan, but Fort Detrick, and where the other biosafety level 4, I did the Ebola work in 1999. And they said, and you could see the publication, and there's a group in Switzerland on the publication. So remember what we do? We send the infected cell lines around the globe. So it was 2015 when the emergence paper came out. And it's very clear the last three flu seasons, 16, 17, and 18. That's why you want to read the chapter about, you know, the scientists like Timothy Cunningham and Jeff Bradstreet who lost their lives. Because it was very clear that flu season that Timothy Cunningham at the CDC said, wait a minute, this flu vaccine is killing people. So now we know that flu vaccines increase the susceptibility to coronaviruses by between 36% and 440%. Oh, okay. So all of those years when you were told, and Dell even delved into this, I shouldn't use that word. Dell even got into this today on Highwire. And he said, oh, well, the antibody test that now it looks like all these millions of people are actually infected, the 4.1 and 7, and they're immune. So they got this infection when the flu season was really bad, but don't go ahead and get that go ahead and get that vaccine anyway. It's not influenza, and the flu vaccine doesn't work, but go ahead and maybe it was coronavirus, but we never looked then. And so right now we're calling everything coronavirus, and when the 80,000 died last year in the severe, and it was a dry cough. And Bobby Kennedy said the same thing to me, back last October. Wait a minute, or maybe it was December. Wait a minute, we all went skiing in Vail in Colorado, and my wife got the worst sick, but we all got that cough. My friend over here, who's 85, I call her my West Coast mom. Horrible cough last year. She's listened to me a long time, so she said, they said, oh, you've got the flu, get the vaccine, and she's like, no, test me for influenza. Wasn't influenza. Was it corona? Do the antibody test now. But I said, don't do it now. You're fine. She recovered. So, but that we can, that now they're spinning the argument saying, oh, you're asymptomatic carriers and you're going to make somebody sick. No, not if you're immune. This is the whole heart of everything. So yes, it's clearly been here at least since 16 or 17. And Fort Detrick was shut down in early 19 and late 18. I don't even know how many months, but one of our colleagues was still there. It was shut down for safety concerns. So was Wuhan's lab. But you're sending cell lines back and forth. We mail them. That was in the XMRV, it was unintended spread of a biosafety level 2 virus. No, it was a biosafety 3 virus because it was a contagious mouse origin retrovirus. It spread through the air. I didn't get infected from body fluids. I got infected like Kent Brantley did, through the air. I mean, that's what the big, oh my God, we can't retrofit our labs for to protect everybody. So now you've got a contagious cancer causing virus in exactly the numbers that they say this coronavirus is infected. So I see it as a red herring, and the evidence that the clinical data don't support what a coronavirus does, they don't do that. I'm sorry, you got to understand the biology. So it's over. They're not killing anybody. They're doing the wrong treatments because it's not the coronavirus causing COVID-19.
Is there going to be a natural course to this illness now, what is nature doing in all this?
Oh, sure. We've got a natural herd immunity. And that's what it suggests from the kids developing, no disease, strong antibodies. The people who are recovering are actually the convalescing people who actually got sick, have neutralizing antibodies. No, we never need a vaccine for this again because we got these and they're serious. They're dangerous infections in the susceptible, as is always true. And that's why I'm here today, because your patients aren't out of the woods yet. But you're not going to be exposed to it from human to human contact. You're going to be exposed to it through the needle, because you likely already are exposed if you got a flu vaccine in the last few years other reasons, and you will reactivate it. There are many, many coronaviruses in there, many, many cell lines. And so, people who got the polio shot could easily be carrying this, and you want to leave it latent or dormant. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Judy, talk to us a little bit about the role of different CBD products.
That's fabulous because, in fact, those are the dimmer switches on the flame. And so I might go ahead and share a screen and show a couple of slides on that talk because...
Christine, can we do that, Christine?
Yeah, Judy, do you see the share screen button on your, as a panelist?
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. So I gave this talk a few weeks ago. Sorry about my dirty desktop. Let's see if that works. Yes, did that share it?
Looks great.
Okay. So what I did a few weeks ago was give this talk for the Canna World Expo. So you can find every one of these slides. This was an online meeting on April 4th and 11th. So I gave this talk on April 4th, and I know it's on our website, and I can get the links if anything happens. But this, I'm talking all about SARS-CoV-2 prevention and treatment of the development of COVID-19. So we can forget all the corruptions because we already got that. The vaccines are driving the pandemics. We already got that. But here's the propaganda, and I want to go back because I saw some people confused about the testing. Well, here's the propaganda masquerading as science. So this is a company, Becton Dickinson, that makes a lot of antibody testing. And they say in their marketing stuff, the test analyzes blood, serum, plasma for IgM and IgG. IgM provides the first line of defense during viral infections, followed by a generation of adaptive high affinity IgG responses for long-term immunity and immunological memory. And so then they go on to say the detection of COVID-19 antibodies indicate a recent exposure, but the detection of IgG antibodies indicates a later stage of infection, suggesting people are more infectious. And nothing could be further from the truth. That's not what antibody test says. The serology tests say you're immune. So you're immune, you're good. You know, and so that's that one. And this is what's been talked about today, the fundamental principles of the spread, the rapid growth of infection, disease, and death happened 2 years ago, happened in August. The slow one around the world from the lab workers spreading, the initial phase, slow accumulation of new infections. Those were the lab workers in Switzerland, at Harvard, at North Carolina, in Seattle, because that's where the work was being done. So the nosocomial spread to the lab workers is all there. And then as it spread out and people developed immunity and very few people got the really severe cough or any symptoms for that matter, and most people recovered, it was just called flu, influenza, in the last years. And I won't go through that. So this one's really important with the glyphosate, and Stephanie Seneff, you know, we'll talk about that. So we need the intracellular antioxidant. So if you don't have glycine and you've got glycine with a phosphate molecule, you don't have glutathione. And that's the key to the bats, because very high levels of metabolic rates generate the damage. That's what a big flying rat does. and then the next thing is they have that interferon alpha. In a trigger. Theirs is ready to go. You don't have to reverse transcribe or anything. So we know about the receptors and the endogenous immune system. And here's the key slide. So whether it's LPS and bacterial infections, that's why using a Z-Pak or using the hydroxychloroquine prevents the flame from going up over here, the inflammatory mediators at NF-kappa-B. But if you use cannabinoids, you block the NF-kappa-B, the flame, and this is just cannabinoids, CBD, and you drive it towards interferon beta. So now we have a commercial product of interferon alpha, and you can use interferon beta. You can upregulate interferon beta in your body by using cannabinoids to drive away from the fire and towards the interferon beta. Do you need, and that's really critical, and I talk about the disease signatures here. Importantly, TGF-beta, that, you know, we've talked about that master regulator of the immune response and how it feeds back. I think this was the lecture I gave you guys a couple of summers ago. At the level of the hematopoietic stem cell, it's driving the inflammatory macrophages, it's driving the suppressor cells, it's driving the Th17. And importantly, now this brand new paper, you know, STAT3 is a big problem in ME and in Lyme patients. So what happens is you by a single methylation, you hypermethylate and silence the suppressor of cytokine signaling genes, so they can't turn off the flame. So how do we turn TGF-beta off? Block CB2 or drive CB2. Here's your Th17. So this is TGF-beta and your inflammation. And again, this talk is all available. And I believe we have me talking doing this when I did this very quickly that day. So you get the inflammatory neutrophils, you get the suppressor macrophages, you get the myeloid-derived suppressor cells. We get that Th17 and we block NK cells. We block dendritic cells for making type 1 interferon. This is your plasmacytoid dendritic cell. It has to shut down those infections, and you block it if you're driving the flame instead of and blocking PDCs. This is Ampligen. Why does Ampligen work in your patients? Because it turns back on. It bypasses the block in that subset that had XMRV, where had crippled plasmacytoid dendritic cell. They could not produce interferon alpha. So these patients can't, and that's in those that become patients, you know, and not just carriers of XMRV, it's turned back on interferon alpha. And that was all Frank's work that was, you know, corrupted after we were taken out of the game. But here's the TGF-beta, THC. You don't need THC. All you need to do is modulate the inflammatory immune cannabinoid receptor number 2. It turns good, takes ATP, the G proteins to increase TGF-beta expression. When TGF-beta gets too high, it does a negative feedback loop and turns down the inflammatory cannabinoid receptor. So that's an on-off switch that's built into us in our endocannabinoid system. So all we have to do we need THC? Nope. Taming THC. We can use lemons, limonene. We can use alpha-pinene. We can use beta-carotene to modulate, and there are hundreds of papers, to modulate in a downward way CB2 to keep the flame from getting too high and drive towards type 1 interferon responses. So it's all out there in simple foods. Here's two selective CB2 agonists, beta-carotene, that's in black peppers, and that was in the other paper. These are just two papers of many from 2014, and the therapeutic potential of alpha and beta pinene in Alzheimer's disease was this particular paper. Here again, this celestrol is a Chinese herbal medicine plant, and that not only downregulates IL-6, so we've heard using in COVID, just use IL-6, oh, we'll use those targeted therapies. Well, they have a bunch of side effects. Why not use the plants, which modulate on their own and take advantage of? So you'll pull broad spectrum hemp where you have the cannabinoids from the entire plant, remove the THC because we're never going to get around those laws, and then use the terpenoids, and we're also using triterpenoids from mushrooms. So there are a lot of triterpenoids that have been really helpful in natural products in these diseases, but this is a very specific IL-6 modulator. So you can use a little bit of beta-carotene, a little bit of this, and then just broad spectrum hemp right there in your foods. You can use it as, you know, you can eat it. We know of a juice that we use here. The harlequin leaves look quite different from some of the other strains. So we do as we always do, take advantage of strains in the different CBG, CBNs, and natural products, which aren't psychoactive. So we've got a beautiful CBD, THCA, CBDA, just oil extract that we give the autistic kids, calms them right down. Especially when instantly, and it should be perfectly legal in all 50 states. There's no THC in it. Certainly, if you heat it up, you go that way. So we don't smoke anything. I mean, you certainly wouldn't smoke anything if you're dealing with upper respiratory infections, which TGF-beta drives. So here's two more papers of celestrol and the naturally occurring inhibitor of that key inflammatory cytokine, IL-6. So all of these natural products can be used just the way we made drugs, you know, most of my life, and as treatment for multiple myeloma, which we've done, the natural triterpenoid, the mushroom products, the cannabis together in a rational way. And of course, you could add a little Scutellaria of Bacillus georgii in there and get your antiviral anti-entry. So this is the interferon alpha. That was March 31st, 1980, just before I graduated. That was my first job. That was the first immune therapy we made for a cancer known as hairy cell leukemia, which we thought was associated with viruses, but we never got to do that work. But this is a friend of mine, a doctor that I won't mention, and the FDA came to his place and they raided they stopped him from selling a PET product, which means the for your animals, all you have to do is put this in the feed or put it in, you know, in their water, and they won't spread their coronaviruses. They won't activate the expression of a coronavirus. Remember, it's not the presence, it's the expression. You cannot become infected with a virus that's dormant, that's not expressed, that's not viral particles. You cannot become infected by viral RNA that you have to amplify 50 million times in your nose. Those are not carriers that are risking people to get infected. But what he basically said is he stopped selling it because this FDA agent came in there, hunted him down, found something he did wrong, as we all know happens to us, and just shut him down, or cost to the point where you lose your business. And this is probably the most significant paper of everything. Is I have been working with Chris Shade, who has a fabulous pill formulation that dissolves at a specific pH. I mean, he's got a patent-pending capsule with curcumin, another potent anti-IL-6, as you know, but he uses his skills in formulation to formulate that capsule so it dissolves, goes right to the bone marrow, and all we have to do is put those plants that block transiently short-term that CB2 receptor, and you get a heightened intensity and breadth of antigen-specific antibody responses in the very old and the very young. So there you are. Who's susceptible to COVID? The very old and very young. So I'm going to make a vaccine that's in a capsule. It has purified coronaviruses, and I'm good with taking it. I've taken everything. And you've got peptide T. Why? We're gonna modulate that CCR5, what we discovered back with HIV. It's the same story. Who was the control for the HIV trials of peptide T? Chronic fatigue syndrome. There's no question we're right. We can treat the people. We can prevent your patient population from getting sick. And we can restore and fix common variable immune deficiency using cannabinoids. And you don't need THC.
Judy, just on a very practical note, can CBD, can you rebuild the immune system up to kind of be resistant to this bug? Should people go on a daily small dose with it in a preventive way, or, you know, do you have a particular product in mind, sort of that, or can you write us a little recipe with some of the terpenes and other limonene and all the other oils, and you write a recipe that we can put on our website, sort of that a little sort of cocktail that people that would make sense for this time, like to take for a few months?
Well, I can actually do even better, because I mentioned Chris Shade, and Quiksilver Scientific has taken advantage of having full spectrum, broad spectrum products with beta carotene in it, with, you know, depending on the formulation. So he's got one called, and I don't make any money. My job is just to identify good products. And I have one more manufacturer I can mention that his products are available right now with other adaptogenic herbs, we call them, like Scutellaria and other things. So his quicksilverscientific.com, his PN for pain has the curcumin capsule, and that will be a fabulous one right now. And it absolutely does work. He has an AX, and that takes advantage of things like melatonin, which we know are antiviral and anti-HIV and things like that, in melatonin, and will work in COVID-19 as well. That, I believe that's called AX. And a couple of others. I use the broad spectrum and the full spectrum. It's important. I mentioned in the very beginning deuterium depleted water, but you know, things like ketone diets, you know, things like not eating simple sugars, because that's driving the deuterium buildup and further crippling the mitochondria from being able to produce energy. I love what he's got already out there. And again, I know another cytogen is the name. I'll jump up a minute and see if I can.
We're going to have Dr. Boros and Dr. Dorfman on May 8th talk for us. So if you want to learn.
This is the label of the other product that we have. It's Cytogen. Cytogen is the name of the product. And it's globalhealthbrands.com. And the CEO is Andrew Serafini. And again, these are legal to ship in all 50 states. So I think I've already directed you in the past to Andrew, but in the last year with our help, Frank and I consult, Mark Consulting, what we do is we consult with people to build the products. We're not manufacturing, we don't own anything. We just, the intellectual property belongs to them and we just tell them what'll work and what patient indications. So that Cytogen product has an awful lot of great products with adaptogenic herbs. I'll get to Andrew's website and show you what that looks like at some point in time. And he also has a product with scutellaria, and we do know it's useful in these patient populations.
Well, Christine, what's our time schedule like? Because I know we...
We usually do these for an hour, so we're at an hour. But is there anything we want to do in concluding?
Do you want to take any questions from your chat? Is there any confusion that comes up that I can... And again, here's Fauci on your last picture. So the who and the why is kind of obvious. You know, there's the unholy trinity. Varmus is the yellow tie guy. There's Fauci and Francis Collins. That's who Frank calls the unholy trinity. That was taken at the NIH Clinical Center. I call it Criminal Center in 2011. And they're giving an award to an Israeli researcher, that lady's Nida in the pink. And I don't know her name. I never met her, but they're giving an award of millions of dollars. Again, the grant money going out of this country when it's illegal. And who holds the patent since 2004 for cannabis? NIH. And so they control the grant, they control the journals. So the whole system after the fraud of the plague of corruption that was COVID-19 and perpetrated on the world, that'll go down. And then we'll get grants that are fair. We'll get journals that are not censored, that aren't commercials from Big Pharma, news shows on TV that aren't commercial from Big Pharma. Whole thing goes down. Shut the CDC, shut the FDA, take away the FDA's ability to tell any doctor how to practice medicine. It's just time we stop legislating medicine. And that's all I fight for most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Are you hopeful, Judy, that things are going to change?
Yeah. I'm not just hopeful. The end of the book. So you must read the book, Plague of Corruption, because the end of the book is the big gotcha. You know what? It captures everybody in their crimes since at least 2014. They have known. And the reason they have known is the end of the book. So you'll see it. We've got all the proof. We've got everything to show every one of those studies was fraud, commission fraud that continues to this day. So, it will liberate these patients. And I really do believe that just, mistake, not a mistake. This was a pandemic and millions of people suffered and died just like with HIV, just like with Ebola, just like with Zika, and this was really the XMRVs. And, my opinion is always going to be the worst. And it didn't have to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Judy, I have a question. Who should people vote for in November?
Well, really, one of the most important things is your state level. The most important thing is the state level. And that is, because, the federal level can't do anything if the governor of California or, in Michigan, the corrupt governor, they're all getting paid. So who they should vote for is anybody not being paid by Big Pharma. And so, and ask the questions and ask the important stances. And then I would say certainly Trump. I mean, they came out, Fauci and Gates came out in 2017 and said, oh, we got a pandemic for you. So he was caught in a rock and a hard place. I'd say if he doesn't fire them all and end this today, we don't need a phase, bring people back to work. You know, everybody, it's clear, especially after today's high wire. It's so clear. It's over, folks. Go outside. One more day is millions of children dying from starvation, people who can't get food, people whose lives are ruined. We did it in HIV. We've done it, for 40 years, this really has to end and totally reorganize our healthcare, give medicine back to practitioners. And that means every kind of practitioner. And I think we can do it.
Thank you, Judy. I think we need to leave it there. Huh? Mm-hmm. Christine, if you have more time, I mean, I could spend...
Judy, we'd love to have you back. I know you're so busy now, and I want to make sure we'll send everybody the link to your book and any other information we can, if you don't mind, people are asking about these slides, if we can send those out as well.
Make sure you get them in an email.
And I see you making your rounds on a lot of podcasts and everything right now. So please, everyone, if you want to hear more from Judy, I think we're all going to have to listen to this talk a few more times to make sure we're getting all of it.
We're on Twitter now. Somebody came out with a fake Dr. Judy Twitter on Saturday. So we are now on Twitter.
You know you made it, right?
Come out with a real one. So we are on at Dr. Judy A. Mikovits with an S, not a Z. You know, that's the Twitter. Our website, plaguethebook.com. We work really hard to keep all of these slides up there since this came from Canna World. So that was that first slide. Okay, great. So that Canna World conference talk has been up there for quite a while. We're trying to do everything we can. And when people write me, you know, the book's sold out, but I understand it at Amazon. I understand there is one source of it right now called, Million Books or... I'll figure it out. I forgot between here and there. We just found a source. I don't even have a copy. I didn't know I had to pre-order one to get one.
I have a question to that. Amazon and Facebook have eliminated most of the books that are pointing in the direction that you're pointing us. So make sure that stays available. By the way, Daniela is here with me. She says hi. So I'm on a very personal level. Well, Judy, thanks so much. Thanks for being you.
I can't do anything else.
I know you've tried really hard sometimes, but it didn't work.
I really do. I am a lot calmer than I used to be. I know it's hard to believe, but I'm learning. And this is important because I've said this in a number of talks, because we really have to forgive each other. So since I learned most of this, I mean, I had no idea when our first book came out in 2014, the depth and the breadth of the plague of corruption. I didn't know who Brian Hooker were. I didn't know the CDC was, was involved in all of this. I didn't know that Ian Lipkin was the one who took down Andy Wakefield. I didn't know any of this stuff. And so that's why we wrote this second book to really end the Vaccine Injury Compensation Act of 1986, restore liability, restore healthy medicine, get these bad guys out, and the old boys corrupt network. I mean, and Tony Fauci, Harold Varmus, they're 80 years old. There's a simple way to get rid of the corrupt old boys network. We're mandatory retirement, 65, they're all gone. It Lipkin, Limdick, every one of them gone. It's easy, done, retired, no more. And then in the future, nobody can sit in a position that long and have all the power, because it's just too complicated science unless we have, and we have brilliant people like the people I'm not talking about, any of my own research, and people coming up with energy therapies to just identify coronavirus and zap it. You know, HBOT, the work of Ted Fogarty, David Brownstein, MD, who's, that nobody gets sick. They haven't lost lost a single patient. So we're not saying we won't see these infections again, but let's usher in a new age where alternative is no longer alternative, but frontline real healthcare, not you know, sick care and pushing drugs and lifelong clients that never get well, because we know we can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Judy. You're an angel in our field.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank you.
Almost like a semi-god. So thanks for talking us kind of normal people.
You know, the normal people that never let go and continue to trust. And I see them all, and many, many people who I haven't been able to talk to since I was jailed. You know, they don't appreciate the depth of the story and the kinds of things. And I, you know, as I even learned, I did not learn until last Saturday that Ian Lipkin took that $34 million prize for the multi-center study, which was commission fraud, that Tony Fauci stopped. We got Montoya's samples positive. Remember, what's the end of plague? Oh, 86% of them. Exactly. And so he stopped the study when we, against all odds, me doing virology by phone, not allowed to go in a lab under threat of arrest, starting, you know, after I was already arrested. So the threat, they carried it out. So you have to worry about that once they've done it once. And just that people could never understand why is your name on that paper? Well, they told us every patient population was equally represented. And then I said, so they had a super secret call with Fauci, Varmus, and Collins on it to unblind the study in the summer of 2012 or in the late spring. And on that call, which was voice recognition only, should have used my identical twin, but voice recognition only for the people that were allowed on the call. They said, well, there's no association. And I said, I don't care. 6% is still 25 million Americans walking around with a cancer-causing virus that don't have to get sick, with a neuroimmune disease-causing virus that we can prevent, with pre-exposure prophylaxis, with stopping vaccinations, with all the things that you do. And so then, until yesterday, I didn't look at the paper that said, in the last line of the abstract, there was no evidence of infection, when table 3 showed the evidence of infection. So, you know, at the time I was kept silent. I never saw the data. I was just told everybody knows it's not BP62 and everybody knows there's plenty of evidence of XMRVs in these diseases and we'll put you right back to work. Well, that was a lie. He got paid off and he took that money directly to start the fraud that is COVID-19 and to start, you know, to continue to weaponize viruses, which in my opinion, targeted this patient population specifically, the chronic Lyme, the ME/CFS, the autism, the people who have already paid the dearest with these vaccine injuries and the contaminated blood supply. And they will be the ones who die. And that's why it's so important that you guys take care of them and that we know how.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Judy, so much. And thank you everyone who joined us live. And we'll be sharing the recording and link to all of the wonderful work that Judy mentioned in her talk. And we'll be inviting you back if you have the time. Sure. Dr. K, you're gonna be here next Thursday via Zoom. Yep. Great, thanks. We'll get an update for you. But the CBD was a big one. We hadn't mentioned that yet in our protocol. So that was a great tip, Judy, for this time.
You can get these products in. I guess practitioners get discounts, so you can, we'll get that going.
Great. And then Petra and Laszlo are going to be on May 8th. So, you know, Petra's a dear friend, and we're going to be talking about deuterium depletion for anyone who missed that or doesn't know anything about that. We're going to have a lecture in a few weeks, and we'll just keep at it. So thank you so much, Judy, for your time and your wisdom, and thank you all for joining us. And Dr. K, go to bed. It's late, huh? Yep. So you must be tired.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all. Have a lovely rest of your day, and we'll be in touch.
Okay.